Joining us on the show for this week's edition of Smart Macro is our Chief Investment Officer here at Financial Sense Wealth Management, Chris Poplava. So Chris, we just spoke with Anna Wong, Chief U.S. Economist at Bloomberg for our weekday FS Insider podcast, and she had some interesting comments on the U.S. GDP number that came out stronger than expected for the third quarter, above expectations, but also showed that the U.S. economy grew over twice as fast compared to the second quarter. Of course, there was a lot of talk about a reacceleration in the U.S. economy, and it appears that we have seen that. At least from the second quarter to third quarter at this point. The big question I asked Anna was, is this sustainable? And they have had a recession forecast now for anywhere from the third to the fourth quarter of this year. And she said that this is not sustainable and they still are sticking to their end of the year recession forecast, which they believe is going to materialize with a mild or shallow recession into 2024. So that is their forecast. They're sticking to it. And one of the big things that we discussed was the fact that 40%, that's 40% of US GDP is now being driven by fiscal spending from the US government with the trillions of dollars that are being spent. So with that said, what are your thoughts on the outlook and what are some of the things that you are paying attention to currently?
Well, Chris, digesting the GDP report, you know, I concur with Anna, where essentially two of the big components that pushed GDP in the third quarter were, I think, one-off things such as inventories helped to build GDP. And when you look at total inventories compared to the trend that was in place prior to COVID, just too high. And then secondly, as Anna pointed out, when you look at what drove it, the big thing was consumer spending. And what's concerning is that consumers are spending more than they're earning. So that means credit card outstanding balances are going up, savings rates are declining, and that's just simply not sustainable, particularly when you look at record high credit card interest rates. So with income, real income growth slowing, that definitely is a concern for me going forward that, you know, the strength that we're seeing really was a one-off event that I don't see going forward.
So again, 40% of US GDP is estimated to be driven by the amount of money being spent by the US government into the economy, having a massive influence. One thing that you've discussed and that we've been discussing on the show now for some time is just the amount of treasury debt that is having to be issued in order to finance all this spending. How does that relate to your outlook on surge in bond yield and some of the other factors that we're looking at currently?
Basically, Chris, I see the rise in interest rates really starting to reflect pain in almost every area of the economy. And I think particularly when you look at governments, Chris, it's only going to get worse. For example, when you look at the U.S. right now, we're looking at around $30.8 trillion in debt. And this is excluding intergovernmental holdings. And the average coupon U.S. government debt is just over 2%. And the weighted average maturity is about 6 years. Now, between today, and we're talking on October 27th, between today and the end of the year, the U.S. government is going to have $4.2 trillion of debt mature that needs to be refinanced. And in 2024, we're looking currently at $6 trillion of debt coming due. So we're talking literally, Chris, between now and the end of 24, 33% of all outstanding U.S. debt coming due. The current average coupon on U.S. debt is just over 2%. And when you look at interest rates in the U.S., looking from on the low end, you know, you've got the 5-year and the 10-year just under 5. But when you look at T-bills, you've got a 1-year T-bill and 6-month T-bill pushing roughly 5.5%. That's a double the interest rate of what our average coupon is. So we're going to see a sizable increase in the amount of payments going towards paying interest on U.S. debt. And that's going to be continuing to pressure the bond market when you have this massive influx of supply. At the same time, you've got commercial banks cutting their holdings, the U.S. Federal Reserve cutting its holdings, and major holders abroad of U.S. Treasuries cutting, such as China and Japan. That is a problem where you have rising supply and dwindling demand. That could push bond prices lower even further and interest rates higher. And what really concerns me, Chris, is the U.S. relative to our peers. So we're all kind of in the same situation, falling manufacturing, falling inflation, and yet rising interest rates. And again, the U.S. has a huge supply wall coming in the next 14 months or so. Now, when we look at the U.K., they have their average coupon is just under 2%, so not much different than the U.S. But when you look at the United Kingdom, their average maturity, Chris, is 14 years. So the UK was extremely smart by taking advantage of the decline in interest rates and issuing 10, 20, 30-year bonds and not fixating by issuing low coupon, you know, T-bills. So that is, you know, to their credit, they're going to be a little bit shielded by pushing out the maturity of a lot of their debt further out. And when you look at them, that's exemplary when you are exemplified when you look at their maturity schedule, where between now and the end of 25, only 10% of UK debt comes due. So they don't have quite the maturity wall that the US does of 33%. When we look at Japan, Japan has 9 trillion in debt outstanding. That's based in dollars, not yen, to do a comparable purpose. And their weighted average coupon is 0.74%. It's not even 1%. But there too, their weighted average maturity is 8 years. So even better than the US, which is around 5. And between now and the end of next year, they're talking about 22% of outstanding Japanese debt is coming due. So worse than the UK, but not quite as worse as the US. And when we look at the European Union, and you look at some member states there, some of the highest debtors, such as France, France has an average coupon of 1.5 with an average maturity of 8 years, and they only have 13% coming due between now and the end of 25. And you look at Italy, Italy has 17% coming due between now and the end of 25, with an average coupon of 2.5 and an average maturity of 7 years. And Germany has roughly 21% of their debt coming due. So what I'm saying is you've got a lot of debt coming due all across the world, but no one comes close to comparing to the US. We have 1/3 of our entire outstanding government debt coming due. So there's going to be an absolute massive surge in debt issuance by the US government. And while we have not as great as debt being issued by or maturing by other countries, that's still a lot. When you think of the US, the UK, Germany, Japan, France, there's a lot of government debt coming due. No one takes, obviously the US takes first place. But I'm concerned, Chris, that if we have an economic decline with all of this debt coming due, there may not be enough demand to absorb it all, which could mean even higher interest rates, even into a weakening economic environment. Now, that's something we have not seen in developed nations. That's something you see in emerging markets where they have debt issues, where they've just issued too much debt and there's not enough demand for their debt. And that definitely is a concern for me and why for us, we continue to hold short-term bonds because there is that concern. While we do own government debt, ours is short-term in nature, nothing more than 2 years looking out, mostly in T-bills, because I am concerned that there could be kind of a first-time case in the U.S. where interest rates rise during recession, not fall, because of a massive surge in supply on top of a current huge maturity wall coming to the U.S.
Yeah, and as you mentioned in a prior podcast, you know, we've been moving into the shorter end of the yield curve by locking in those higher rates, that nice yield. So for any of you listening, if you want to contact us to see how we can assist you, give us a call at 888-486-3939. And so, you know, when we spoke with you in the past, we were neutral on the outlook for the stock market, but that was a very short leash, expecting that there was a very strong likelihood that we could see the stock market decline, which means we would be moving more into that defensive posture. Where do things stand today?
Well, we've had a pretty decent decline in the general markets, a lot of weakness since the peak in July. And we're getting at a point, Chris, where the markets are sufficiently oversold to expect some kind of relief rally. Now, you throw on top of that the normal strong seasonal period of buybacks by corporations in November, December. That's going to add some buying demand for the market. And on top of that, when you look at CTAs or systematic trading institution type funds, they're pretty underweight the market. And so if you have any kind of a turnaround, you could see them fuel and add money to the market as well. So I think there is a chance, Chris, of a decent recovery rally in the financial markets. And until we really start to see economic data such as employment really turn south and unemployment rise, I really don't see the stock market rolling over just yet, particularly if you have the mega giants holding in there like Magnificent Seven, like Facebook, Microsoft, or Meta, Apple, Microsoft, and Amazon. So, my thought, Chris, is we could hang in there, through the end of the year. But to me, if we have a rally, this isn't a sell-off to buy. This will be a coming rally to sell into to get towards a more defensive posture, because Christine's are really getting to an unsustainable level. And we just got, for example, third quarter data for U.S. interest expense. And just to kind of give you an idea of where things stood pre-pandemic, in the fourth quarter of 2019, the U.S. spent an annualized amount of $465 billion of interest on our debt. And we just got, again, as I mentioned, the third quarter data, where we spent an annualized rate of $981 billion on interest, nearly double what we were paying just a few years ago. And as I mentioned to you, the U.S. is paying on average about 2% coupon on our existing debt. And we've got one third maturing between now and the end of next year. And if it does so at over a 5% interest rate, we could easily see the U.S. paying over $1.5 trillion on interest expense on our debt. And that would clearly exceed our defense budget and start to cause some real issues in the U.S. For example, when you look at tax receipts, which are slowing from a peak in 22, if you have falling tax revenue with rising expenses, such as interest expense on our debt, Medicare and Social Security increased due to the COLA adjustments that the U.S. Issued earlier this year, you could see the budget deficit blow out even further, which would mean even issuing more debt than is initially estimated. So you have a deficit where you're basically issuing debt to cover that on top of a massive wall of maturing debt between now and the end of next year. So to me, Chris, that's a huge concern that interest rates are getting out of hand in terms of the pain that they're causing. And it's not just the government. When you look at, for example, for the U.S. consumer, you look at non-mortgage interest payments, they are up over 60% year over year. So as of the second quarter, they were up 63% versus the second quarter of 22. I mean, we're talking huge sums of money where we paid $475 billion in interest expense from the consumer in the second quarter of this year. We don't have the data yet for the third quarter, which you can conceive is going to be even higher, probably over half a trillion dollars. And when you look at the consumer specifically, and you look at credit card loans outstanding, we're now over $1 trillion as of the second quarter in outstanding credit card debt. And what is really scary, Chris, is just before the pandemic, the average credit card interest rate was about 15.5%. That had a mild decline to about 14.5 until late last year, and then it started to rise. Currently, the average interest rate is 21.26%. That is the highest interest rate for credit cards ever. And that goes back even to the 1970s, where interest rates and inflation were incredibly high. So the consumer credit card debt is now exceeded $1 trillion. Pre-pandemic, you're looking at around $900 billion. And the interest rate has jumped dramatically. And when you look at government spending, Chris, you know, it's just not sustainable. And it has been a huge part of our growth. So when you look at, for example, the 70s through, let's say, 2020, so, you know, basically half a century, the average amount of government spending relative to the economy or GDP was about 20%. And we're running about 24% in the third quarter. So we're way above normal. And that needs to come down. And if the government has been the biggest driver of economic growth, what happens when they go back to normal level? Well, that means growth is going to slow. And it's a concern, Chris, too, if we have a recession where you look at our deficit spending right now, we're at 8% budget deficit, and that was through the second quarter. That is the largest deficit in U.S. history outside of a recession or wartime period. And typically, you see the budget deficit jump anywhere from 5 to as much as 10%. In a downturn. So if we're running at about 8% now, we could easily see us jump, you know, 13 to even, you know, 20% budget deficit, which would really be an issue for the U.S. government and bond investors as a whole, because that would just mean even greater and greater issuance of government debt.
Well, Chris, I think the main message here is that these higher borrowing costs that we see currently, whether or not you're talking about housing, autos, credit card loans, or even for the U.S. government, in terms of soaring interest expense, which is approaching $1 trillion, this is all aligning for, at best, a slowdown from this current big number that we saw for Q3 GDP of 4.9% into Q4 and into 2024. As we spoke with Moody's Analytics recently, they also see intensifying headwinds into the fourth quarter and 2024. They're expecting at least a slowdown, or at worst, probably a mild recession. This is also aligning with Anna Wong at Bloomberg, saying that they expect a recession before the end of this year. So that means, as you said, pain ahead for the economy, but you can take advantage of that by investing on the short end of the yield curve with treasury bills, which is what we're doing here at Financial Sense Wealth Management. And if any of you are not doing that and you want to speak with how we can assist you in making any changes to your portfolio in alignment with some of the things that we discussed today, again, give us a call at 888-486-3939. And also check out our new website. It's financialsensewealth.com. So you can check that out and give us any feedback you have on our newly revamped website. Well, Chris, as always, it's a pleasure to speak with you for our Smart Macro edition here for Financial Sense NewsHour. We look forward to speaking with you in another 2 weeks.
Thanks for having me, Chris.
Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.